when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one.
There are people dying, oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all.
We'd like to welcome everybody. Welcome to Let's Create a Better World with Bobby Elias. And today, stepping in for Bobby is Evelina Molina from Santa Rosa, California. Very excited to be here today, helping out Bobby on this exciting and wonderful program on the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we're going to have a very, very special guest, a very accomplished person in business, but not just any kind of business. We're talking about the right kind of business, the kind of business that would be wonderful if at some point in the future will be mainstream. And our guest today is Mitch Rofsky. He has devoted his career to helping out and starting and visioneering and pioneering socially responsible businesses. Mitch has been present at the creation of many important progressive business institutions, such as the popular Working Assets Credo Long Distance phone service, Working Assets Mutual Funds, and we are also going to be talking today about a business that he's actually participated in the co-founding, which is a Better World Club, America's only eco-friendly auto club. Welcome, welcome, Mitch, to Let's Create a Better World.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Mitch, let's begin talking about how and what was your journey to get to this passion that you have, which is to be so involved in socially responsible business. I would assume that maybe initially when you started in business, you might have started with more of a capitalistic vision, or did you kind of start right away with this idea of socially responsible business? Tell us something about your journey.
I'd be happy to do that. I came out of business school and law school and worked for Ralph Nader up on Capitol Hill in Congress. And when you work for Ralph, you work on all kinds of issues. But my kind of focus was banking. And Ralph was very enamored of consumer cooperatives from his time in Europe, where in some countries, consumer co-ops are like Safeways here in the U.S. And so we persuaded Congress to establish a bank, the National Cooperative Bank, to lend money to cooperatives. And then I was asked to join the transition team and ended up joining the bank, where I became executive vice president and ran the venture capital arm of the bank. And it was really I already had a perspective on the marketplace coming out of business school, et cetera. But it was really at the co-op bank where I was forced to look at American business, and in a way that where I had to conclude that consumer cooperatives, now there are lots of areas where cooperatives are very strong in this country, wholesale cooperatives, worker cooperatives, etc., but consumer cooperatives are very difficult to make work in the American marketplace. They've really only worked where the business community just had no interest in the sector at all. So credit unions grew up in the United States because banks had no interest in working people whatsoever. HMOs grew up because doctors really weren't interested in group practice. Rural electric co-ops or consumer co-ops that developed because utilities had no interest in wiring the countryside. But when consumer co-ops face conventional business competition, it's very, very difficult. It's very difficult for them to attract the management and capital that they need. And as a result, while I was working with co-ops, I really concluded that socially responsible business had a much better chance in the American marketplace. And that's what brought me to becoming the first chair of Business for Social Responsibility and really focusing on how you make business more responsible.
Now, Mitch, many of us, well, maybe not many of us, but I myself have been a admirer of cooperatives for a very long time. Actually, I shop at a cooperative grocery store in our community called Community Market. And, of course, we know that San Francisco, which I'm north of, has many wonderful cooperatives, as Oakland does. I'm wondering if in your travels and your experience you have come across with the Mondragon model in Spain of cooperatives, and what is your, if you have, what is your opinion of that model of cooperatives?
Well, two things. First of all, I want to be very clear. I am certainly not being critical of the co-op model. Wherever co-ops can succeed, I certainly want them to succeed. But, you know, an example of the limits of this, of the difficulties, is how Price Club became Costco, and Costco has a cooperative model, except that the consumers don't control the business. And it's such a example of the difficulties that co-ops face in the marketplace when businesses that are completely structured like co-ops but aren't co-ops can succeed in such a huge way. But I really hope the co-ops can succeed as much as possible. Having said that, the Mondragon model is a worker co-op model, not a consumer cooperative model. And there are certainly opportunities, and there's a real effort being made right now, which you may have heard about, coming out of Cleveland, to see whether or not the Mondragon model could be adapted in the U.S. There have been little attempts that have really never gotten anywhere, but there is a real effort being made right now.
And what do you say that do the models that you're talking about, the differences, do they involve a consensus way of reaching agreements, or is it much like a board of directors in many ways? And would you also say that part of the reason why there's difficulty with the model of consumer cooperatives is the inability to get capital, which you have been very supportive of on many levels? Maybe you can tell our listeners about how you have participated. What is your feeling? What has been your experience in that level of how do decisions get made?
Well, as far as how decisions get made, I'm not sure exactly which model you're talking about. Obviously, in consumer cooperatives, it's the consumers that elect the board of directors and control management. In a worker co-op, it's the workers that do so, and in a business, a socially responsible business model, it's often, it's obviously the investors, but also stakeholders, consumers, workers, who are often involved. So, you know, each model is slightly different.
Well, it would seem to me that with a member base, it would lend itself to the election of the board. Is that correct?
Yep, exactly. They control the board of directors.
Okay. Do you find that having such a broad base of people in that decision-making process that they are aware enough of the inner happenings of an organization in order to make the right decision?
It's very much of a challenge, very much of a challenge. Again, I do not want to be seen as just, you know, hypercritical of the co-op model, of the consumer cooperative model. That's not where I'm coming from. There are successful co-ops out there, I think. But one issue definitely is control of management. Certainly at the co-op bank, we would see management feel that the consumers were their bosses, which they were, and they would not lead the business necessarily in the way they should, saying, oh, well, you know, these consumers control the board, and so I'm just going to listen to them, even when they thought that the consumer board was in error. So we definitely had examples of that. However, I think that perhaps even a bigger deal, and, you know, the Co-op Bank is obviously just one relatively small financial institution, that when you get to growth points, the capital just is very difficult to come by. And so it's very difficult for a successful cooperative as it grows to grow the way that a capitalistic business, an investor-owned business, would grow.
And we're talking with Mitch Roski, who is a socially responsible businessman in the community. And we're talking today about consumer co-ops. And on behalf of Bobby Elias is Evelina. Let's talk about one of the co-ops, I believe, a Better World Club that you were very active with. Tell us about your role in a Better World Club. What is it about? What is your role? And
sure,
what do you
do? Just to be clear, Better World Club is not a cooperative. It's a socially responsible business. And I'm the president and was one of the founders of Better World Club. We're the nation's only eco-friendly auto club. We compete with AAA and Auto Vantage and all the other auto clubs that are out there. And we do a whole variety of things. We start with the fact that we have a completely different policy agenda than AAA and many of the other clubs have. AAA is part of the highway lobby and therefore has never supported public transit, and we adequately, and we fight them on policy all over the place, everything from greenhouse gas regulation of automobiles to bike lanes, or against bike lanes in much of the country. We just fought them on the 3-foot rule in California, where to let a driver cross a yellow line in order to give a bicyclist 3 feet. And that was just passed last year. And so that's part of what we do, but we also give 1% of our gross to environmental cleanup and advocacy. We discount our membership fees for alternative fuel vehicles, hybrids, electric cars. We surcharge our fees for gas guzzlers, the worst gas guzzlers. We have discounts on green hotels, and we have discounts on hotels and rental cars, but bigger discounts on green hotels and green rental cars. We invented bicycle roadside assistance. We have the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance. We reward the greenest tower in the country with a month of biofuel. So we do quite a bit that other auto clubs aren't doing.
And Mitch, if you were to, if somebody wanted to be a member, can they be a member? Do you cover, like you said, it's nationwide coverage? Is that correct?
Yep. We cover 24/7 nationwide. We also cover you when you travel into Canada.
And maybe you can share with us what have been or what were some of the initial challenges that you had when you came up with this idea? How did the idea come to be where you said, okay, this is our next step? And what would you say are some of the challenges that you had?
Well, I ran the Working Assets Mutual Fund in the early 90s until it was sold. And then I took those principles and started applying them to insurance. I was test marketing auto and homeowners insurance, socially responsible insurance with Nader's help, in the mid to late 90s when I was approached by the environmental community and they said, can you help us out with AAA? They're part of the highway lobby. We fight them all the time. And my reaction was, gee, maybe we should be competing with them. So in 2002, we kicked off competing with them, and you can imagine the challenge. I mean, the first challenge is just that it's David going up against Goliath. And, related is the fact that AAA never tells its members what it's lobbying on. It never asks them what they should be lobbying on, and then it doesn't really report to them what they're lobbying on. And therefore, it's not like AAA has an image that it has in the environmental community. So that was the first big challenge that we've had to confront. The second challenge is a challenge just faced by almost every business, which is that our marketing was reasonably successful in print and other forms. But as is no surprise to you, print ad effectiveness has declined over the past few years because eyeballs are going to the internet. and yet internet marketing is very challenging.
Yes, it is. But more and more people are starting, actually, here in our community at Sonoma State University, they actually have a certificate course specifically geared towards social media marketing. So it's obviously shifted a lot. And in this situation, if people wanted to become members or they wanted to learn more about Better World Club, how can they find out about it? And where do you see Better World Club, let's say, in 5 years?
Well, first of all, you know, we are on social media, so people can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Secondly, people can come and sign up for our e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt. Kicking Asphalt was named the Onion of corporate newsletters by EcoTalk Radio. And so we would, they should definitely check that out. And then, of course, people can become members. You can become members. You can sign up online at betterworldclub.com. You can call us. You can find our phone number there. We're generally, just so you know, there are 60 different AAA regions, and we're generally cheaper than most of them. But when we're not, we'll match their price anyway, so price really shouldn't be the issue. As far as where we want to be in 5 years, we want to be not just an auto club. We want to be a club of socially responsible consumers. And so we're looking at structuring ourselves in that kind of way and broadening ourselves. And we'd, you know, love to be back on the show to talk about it.
Well, Mitch, I'm sure that Bobby will love to have you back. I want to thank you so much for being on the Progressive Radio Network on Let's Create a Better World, and I want to thank you for creating a better world. My last question as we close up, do you foresee a future where funding for these kind of socially responsible ventures will be shifting in the near future? What have you seen as far as the banking industry as we close up? Is there hope on the horizon?
Well, there's definitely hope. There's no question. More and more investors are interested in socially responsible businesses, and so more and more institutions that are open to this are popping up. If people out there are interested in they either have a business that's socially responsible or want to start one, they should go online and check out Investor Circle, because Investor Circle is a group of socially responsible investors, and they can definitely help you, lead you in the right direction.
And if I had an extra spare $1 million somewhere, would I go there if I wanted to actually invest in a portfolio, or if I wanted to put some money towards that? What would you suggest from an investor point of view if I wanted to really start putting my money in where it can make the most impact?
Well, first of all, if from an investment point of view, if you have $1 million, please contact me at Better World
Club. Good work.
Having said that, if you have $1 million, and of course, the word, the critical word, is extra, because it depends what that means. So, if you can truly, if some people who have $1 million need that money for the future and they cannot afford to risk it, and they should be looking at the various socially responsible mutual funds, funds like Calvert and the Parnassus Fund, and there are a number of them out there. You know, you should look those up, and there your money at least will be, again, if you invest in the stock market, equities, you're always taking a risk, but you're not taking the kind of risk you're taking in when you're investing in a new or young company. But if you really do have $1 million that you can afford to risk in that way, then yes, you should look at Investor Circle as one step towards being able to connect with socially responsible entrepreneurs.
And if I'm invested in some kind of a fund where I'm noticing that not all my monies are going to places that I want to continue, can I ask for my fund, you know, to be geared in another way, or is that already decided? Is that more difficult?
Well, you can certainly write to Fidelity or write to Vanguard or any of the other mutual funds and, you know, tell them what you're interested in. But they are certainly not going to change. I'll tell you a story about this in a second. But they are not going to change a fund. They probably would not change a fund even if they heard from, you know, many, many, many of their investors. What they might do is start a new fund that would have social screens. But what's really disappointing is how none of the big families have done that. When I was leaving Working Assets, I actually talked to Fidelity and talked to Templeton, talked to a number of the big funds, and I said to them at the time, here, let's look at social, why don't, you know, let's look at starting a socially responsible fund for you, because sooner or later you're going to do this, so let's do it now. And this was back in the mid-90s. And none of them were interested in doing it. But the fascinating thing is that none of them are still doing it. none of the large, I think Neuberger Berman is the largest mutual fund that has a socially responsible fund. And now Calvert has grown fairly big with their socially responsible funds, but still not compared to Vanguard or Fidelity or Templeton or any of the largest ones. And so when I talked to them, you know, more than 20 years ago, I was completely wrong in forecasting what they would do.
And how can we change that?
Well, I do, that's basically two things.
Or
first
is it
of all,
just
yes.
a hopeless situation with them?
I'm not saying it's hopeless. What I'm saying is two things. One is definitely let them know what you're interested in. And the second thing is move your money to one of the socially responsible funds. The larger the socially responsible funds get, then from a pure competitive point of view, the more pressure there will be on them to start some funds.
Well, Mitch, thank you very much for being here today and for giving us that information and also for the great work that you're doing. And if we can remind our listeners one more time, how can they get involved and how can they learn more? If you can give us the website and maybe a phone number.
Better World Club, betterworldclub.com. Please check us out. And, of course, check out our e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt. And you can certainly reach us by phone as well, 866-238-1137.
And that was Mitch Roski, who's been very active in the creation of a number of important progressive business institutions, the National Cooperative Bank, Working Assets Mutual Fund. We also have the popular Working Assets Credo Long Distance, and now a Better World Club, a socially responsible business here, comparable, I guess, to a green and socially responsible AAA. Thank you very much for being with us today, Mitch.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Well, we are here, and this is, you're listening to Let's Create a Better World. And from Santa Rosa, California, up here in Northern California is Evelina, and we were talking with Mitch, and what exciting information about an alternative, a green alternative to roadside, 24/7 national roadside assistance, advocacy, insurance, and travel services. Next coming up, we'll have Daniel Kerbine, who is going to be talking to us about a program that he is involved in, a certificate program. I had Maria Owl Gutierrez as an interview on a past show, and I thought it would be interesting to have one of the students of the Sacred Journey program. It's a certificate program in rituals, rites, and nature therapy. And that is something here in Northern California that is very popular, working with nature, since we're surrounded by so many beautiful areas, and we have found that nature is a wonderful place to get strength, to feel empowered, and we are going to be talking with Daniel Kerbine, from who is currently going through the certificate program. My name is Evelina Molina, and this is Let's Create a Better World. And talking about nature and therapy and how that works on our psychological abilities to deal with the crisis and the crazy world that we're living in, we have found that nature is a place where people can turn to feel refreshed, to retreat, to escape. And as Maria Owl Gutierrez, in a past show, which is in the archive of the Progressive Radio Network, you can listen to, she's talking about an energy source and a place to thank Mother Earth and to ask Mother Earth for things of guidance and psychological strength. And Daniel, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, and I'm delighted to join you here today.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for being here today on the Progressive Radio Network, Let's Create a Better World. A couple of weeks ago, or actually maybe a month ago, we had Maria Owl Gutierrez. She is the director of a certificate program that you're involved in. Could you share with our listeners today what that is about, and how has it been being a student in this certificate program?
Certainly, yes, and I can now, after 2 months in the program, speak of it from the point of view of being a student, because I think after a week or two or three, it's still a process of integrating and going from the ordinary Western world of living, which is all about consumption, consuming more, what is your place in the world, what are you, you know, what's your job, what are your duties to do next to earn some more money, and what little goodies do you want to purchase next, into another realm, which is all about answering that deep questioning, or that deep longing that people are noticing, that there's something missing when we don't have nature in our lives, and when we aren't engaging in learning some of the mysteries of nature, that that something's really missing, and more there are people wanting to come away from that actually very boring world, but addictive world of money concerns, but mainly the constant consumption and that whole world of where we usually spend most of our time, into, wow, somehow this plant, this earth, Mother Earth, has given me the things I need for my whole life. And when I look around, I see my culture, myself, giving nothing back, not even a thank you. So this is a course that's all about developing leaders who can start to bring those who are seeking it, the therapy and the peace of nature, and voicing those expressions of, you know, desiring to connect with Mother Earth through nature-based rituals and rites of passage. So the course is called Nature Therapy and Rites of Passage. And the idea is to develop leaders who will actually start groups and form groups for rituals of different kinds to accommodate and train other people who want to be live their lives close to the earth and in the presence of Mother Earth and conscious of that there is something really spiritual about that. Do you follow me?
Yes, and I totally do, because I know that when I go out into nature, I find it very healing. And actually, one of the things that I believe that it's not just the context of nature, but it's also just the environment of nature and the freshness and the color and the air and the soil, and returning back to something that many of us have forgotten as a source of strength. Today on Let's Create a Better World with Bobby Elias, who is not here, Evelina Molina is just kind of stepping in here to help out. Very happy to be here from Santa Rosa, California. And we have Daniel Kerbine, who is a student of sacredfuture.org or Sacred Future School. He is going through the certificate program of the Nature Therapy in Rites of Passage with Maria Al Gutierrez, who we have interviewed on a previous program. Daniel, part of the message of this revolutionary kind of education is that nature can play a vital role in the healing of human consciousness.
Yes.
And by tuning in to that healing, it can also help us step in, or help leaders step into a role from a soul level, which sometimes have been very polarized. Like, if you're soulful, maybe you really can't be a leader, and sometimes certain leaders in power, it feels like they don't have a soul. However, you're starting to discover that there are ways that those two can come together. You
right.
are the chair of the Sonoma Group Sierra Club, so you have been a leader in your own right. Tell us a little bit about your experience of those two areas of the soul and leadership. How has going through the certificate program, I believe you said 2 months into it, how have you seen that shift from the point of when you started originally?
Certainly. It's, well, people talk a lot about people, about having leadership and having vision in leadership. We see it a lot. I mean, Lee Iacocca had vision when he developed the Mustang, you know, for Ford Motor Company. I mean, there's an example. Someone had vision and, you know, put that through. In nature therapy and rites of passage, what we're talking about is a more fundamental kind of vision that our ancestors had, to looking seven generations in the future and seven generations back. That kind of vision, looking out over the vast expanse of a valley and seeing what's there, and holding in your bones and in your guts and in your heart what's there. So here's what's common threads, like in Sierra Club, like in a chairmanship with Sierra Club, and things, nonprofits that are oriented toward the protection of the environment. There is an importance to leadership as in terms of having power not over other people, but having power through other people, and really having an understanding of that. You have to have that. And if you're going to have something like a volunteer group, like, you know, Friends of the Earth, Sierra Club, all the thousands that are at work now, working to make to turn this, in the great turning, to turn things around from what the corporate destruction has caused. You have to have consensus leadership. You have to have leadership which is power through others, and which is allows people to channel their passion. They select what their passion is, and they channel that passion through their activism. So they're like in the Sierra Club, there are many different kinds of activists in one group. And they, so the leaders just show appreciation for that someone who has shown up and who has some passion and has had concerns about the environment and is willing to channel some of that passion and interest into something that will make a difference, maybe persuading other people, maybe going to city council meetings, things like that. So it's a very in the world kind of activity. One of the things that I found and that I've noticed a lot of other people now that I've started asking about it and talking to people about it who are in the environmental movement is that we don't always, even though we're doing this work, connect to and understand and talk about the immense feeling of, some people talk about frustration, but not everybody talks about the immense feeling of grief that we have over how much has been lost. I mean, when you get to a point where there's only a handful of coho salmon left when there once were millions, when it's really a big deal that now there's a grizzly bear in California, one in the whole state that has a grizzly bear on its flag, how much we've lost. And people have nowhere to put that, no way to deal with that. But it's real. If we really go out into nature, or we really conceive of and even try to put our minds around the amount of species extinction that there's been, sooner or later we encounter a great sense of loss and a great sense of powerlessness because of it. And so one of the keystone rituals in nature therapy is grief, is actually just grief ritual. Spend a day getting in touch with and expressing your grief over what's been lost and grabbing back the power. That my experience is that connected me to a fantastic amount of power and also a loss of worry, because so much was tied up in unexpressed grief. So that's an important one there. That's an important. It's almost like a rite of passage in a way. Can I give you another example?
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Let me just remind our listeners, you're tuned into Let's Create a Better World. Stepping in for Bobby Elias is Evelina Molina, and we are talking with Daniel Kerbine, who is going currently through the Nature Therapy Rites of Passage Certificate Program at Sacred Future School. Daniel, continue with your point, and then I also have a question about a recent point that you've been working on tracing back your ancestors. Can you talk about what has been that process? What is the purpose of knowing your ancestry, and what has that been like?
Oh, definitely. That brought more to the forefront for me spiritually than I ever thought it would. We went through a ritual of it involved contacting through our spirit and through our minds, et cetera, through chanting various methods. Okay, to visualize and go to some of the places of our ancestors. And I knew that, you know, and I know that my predecessors come from mostly Central Europe, And in fact, my grandparents, I later found out, both came from a little town on the right in Germany, just to the just very near the Polish border. So throughout history, it's sort of like Poles, Czechs, you know, Germans, and even Russians, and all sorts of Slavic people have sort of shared the same territory and a lot of culture. Lived next to lakes, rivers, ate. Part of their staple diet was catching fish in lakes and rivers and eating that, you know, growing things right there in their village. I just got this vivid picture of that, you know, these people with these beautiful mountains and that I actually got, I allowed them to speak to me and just asked them to tell me what they had to teach me. And one thing I came away with was something really simple, right? A real simple manifestation. There are others, but this is simple. Was, well, look at us. We live near a lake. Most of what we eat, it comes from the lake. We eat the fish. You know, we pull out the burdock roots. You know, everything comes from, our life comes around the lake and the water in it. And you don't have that. We want you to start looking for your little tiny allies, you know, so that you can't get the way you eat. So I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, you mean, oh, like algae. And so I started on a regimen of introducing kelp and blue-green algae, you know, mushrooms like maitake, shiitake, and getting those spores and those what my ancestors had called my tiny allies. And it's been really great. It has been really good for my health and my mental acuity and things. So that's just a simple thing that one can get from being in touch with ancestry, and that appreciation of the long view of life is definitely there. I want to say one more thing about that sort of thing about, like, when I say tiny allies, because it's proven now that in the forest floor, there's all this humus, you know, this rotting material, you know, plant material mostly on the forest floor. And it's been found that when people walk through the forest, there are some of the microscopic, some of the molds in there, spores, trigger endorphins in the human brain that, you know, that release serotonin. And so it's actually scientifically true that when people go into the forest, it's an antidepressant. It has an identical response as what's found in what would be called an antidepressant drug. Just walking in the forest. And I would challenge anyone to take a look at and make a curve out of it of the amount of forest that has been destroyed and clear cut, plowed over, you know, or paved over, and look at that ever increasing curve, and look again next to it, the ever increasing curve of antidepressant use. And I will guarantee you'll find that there's a similarity there.
Wow, that sounds very, very interesting. Also, understand from having spoken with Maria Al Gutierrez, I understand she co-teaches this program with her partner. Is that correct? Or
yes, Dwayne. And you know, I always call him Dwayne. I don't remember his last name.
Okay. So Maria Al always mentions that. If we were living in the time of when our indigenous ancestors were still alive, ritual would be a very important part of our life, and would actually be respected instead of looked as something that's not effective or not, as I say, it's just not meaningful. And yet we find that there's so many different initiation ceremonies that bring out that the indigenous people have that are still today that bring out the strengths and recognize the medicine that each individual person carries. Can you talk something about how this program, why is that important to bring out in this day and age? I'd like to talk about young people and the need for ritual initiation and the lack of those ways that our indigenous ancestors of all cultures had.
Right, right. It's definitely something that I know that young people would get something important from. Because it is one of the things that, and young people start getting into the teen years. They start getting into puberty, and it is natural for them to, it's seen as rebellion. In our culture, it's basically seen as rebellion. There are other cultures where it's looked upon as just a holy time in someone's life because who they're going to be is starting to introduce itself. And it's introducing itself as, I am this person. I am not my mother. I am not my father. I am me. And the idea of the ritual rite of passage, very often it's a vision quest. In California, if you go down in the region around Ojai, there are rocks that have these fantastic decorations from where youth were sent for their vision quests. They'd go for 4 or 5 days fasting, just water, and they would go into spirit world contact and express that. They were encouraged to express that with the paintings that they made on these rocks, the petroglyphs. That's where many of those petroglyphs that we see, that's where they come from, is young people discovering what their strength in medicine is and expressing it in a picture on the rocks before they come back to share it with the tribe. And is there something like that in Western United States culture? I don't think so. There are things that we could probably incorporate, though, that could be extremely extremely supportive and strengthening and encouraging. That would be a nice thing to see in teenagers.
Yeah, I believe that the closest that there may be in some of the non-religious rites of passage is the age of drinking. I believe that it's 21 in the state of California. That's sort of the rite of passage. When you turn 21, you get to drink. And possibly voting at the age of 18, but I'm not sure if...
Well, it's kind of interesting. Like you have the Catholic Church, which is kind of comes from the Roman hierarchy. There's some wonderful spirituality in it, and there's some wonderful mysticism in Catholicism. At the same time, the Catholic Church is kind of, they did everything they could to circumvent and subjugate and take over, for instance, fertility, seasonal fertility, rituals and things like that, called it Easter. The winter solstice is what became Christmas. And also the rite of passage toward adulthood became called confirmation. And if I contrast it with a more tribal based, culture like the Jewish culture, you have something quite different. You have the bar mitzvah where the young man says, "Today I am a man." And you have this, you have a corresponding version, of course, for young women. And in confirmation, what I experienced was, it was like, okay, I understand now what the church and the mass is all about. But it wasn't really a rite of passage at all. It was just, you know, a ceremony that had no meaning to me. So we have a lot of room to install in our culture ceremonies that have not only meaning, but can have a great deal of influence on how powerfully we can act and how powerfully we can form community together.
Well, forming community together, that is in itself a wonderful vision to have, and we want to thank you for joining us today on Let's Create a Better World, and looking forward to possibly speaking with you again as you get, how long will your certificate program be with the Sacred Future School?
Until early in May. And also I want to encourage anyone who wants to do something that's ritual, that you don't need any training to do, which is go someplace where it's safe to set up a campfire and with some people that you know and love, family, whatever, and sit around the fire and pass a talking stick around and have everybody speak, and everybody listens while they speak. That's a ritual ceremony, and I think people will find that that's a very powerful and very memorable thing that they did.
Yeah, sitting around and speaking to each other is something that a lot of people have lost at this point in this busy time in this age. But thank you again. And if people want more information, they kind of want to learn more about this nature therapy and rites of passage, is there a website that they can refer to?
There is, Evelina. People can go to, it's Sacred Future, all one word, sacredfuture.org. And I could spell it, sacredfuture.org.
And that is for the Nature Therapy and Rites of Passage. Daniel, thank you so much. I also see, as I'm looking at the website, that there is a complimentary free question and answer intro call on February 8th at noon Pacific Standard Time. So if people just want to call in and ask questions, I believe that probably Maria or a representative of the school, Sacred Future School, will be answering those questions.
That's correct. That's correct. Yes, that's a great opportunity too, to find out more.
Well, thank you very much, Daniel, for being with us again on Let's Create a Better World. Much success to you, and we look forward to hearing more from you as you go through your process and continue on to your rite of passage.
Thank you, Evelina. I appreciate that.
And you're listening to Let's Create a Better World. This is Evelina Molina helping and stepping in for Bobby Elias, who will be back next week. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Public Progressive Radio Network. And remember, if anyone would like to learn more about nature therapy and rites of passage, you can go to sacredfuture.org, or you can go and learn more about our first guest, which was betterworldclub.com, a America's only eco-friendly auto club and a socially responsible business here in the United States. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate having everybody here today. And thank you for opening your hearts to creating a better world for everybody.
When we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one, there are people
dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can go on pretending day by day that the moment somewhere we soon make a change. We all are part of God's great big family.
And the truth, you know, love is all we need.
So we all must lend a helping hand.